Translation by His Divine Grace Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Lord Sri Krishna replied, "My dear mother, I have never eaten dirt. All my friends complaining against me are liars. If you think they are being truthful, you can directly look into my mouth and examine it." Purport. Krishna presented himself as an innocent child to increase the transcendental ecstasy of maternal affection. As described in the Shastra, Tadana Bayan Mityoktir Vatsalya Rasa Poshika. This means that sometimes a small child speaks lies. For example, he may have stolen something or eaten something and yet deny that he has done so. We ordinarily see this in the material world, but in relation to Krishna, it is different. Such activities are meant to endow the devotee with transcendental ecstasy. The Supreme Personality of Godhead was playing as a liar and accusing all the other devotees of being liars. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.12.11, Krita Punya Punjaha, a devotee may attain such an ecstatic position after many, many births of devotional service. Persons who have amassed the results of a vast amount of pious activities can attain the stage of associating with Krishna and playing with him like ordinary playmates. One should not consider these transactions of transcendental service to be untruthful accusations. One should never accuse such devotees of being ordinary boys speaking lies, for they attained this stage of associating with Krishna by great austerities. Tapasa brahmacharyana shamana cha damana cha. Omagyan tamarandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri guruve namah. Namo om vishnu padai krishna pishtai buddhale shimati bhaktivedanta swaminite namini. Namaste sarasvati devi gauravani pracharne nirvisesha sunyavadi paschacha deshtarne. Jai Shri Krishna Taitanya Prabhu Nitananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Sadi Gora Bhaktivrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So I thought of a few things maybe I could say about this verse. Obviously the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam is a very elevated shastra, and so it cannot be taken lightly. But I was thinking, you know, here we are, near the end of 2016, the world has been turned upside down. It's completely changing at a very fast rate, and everything is changing in human society very quickly. So what we once thought was stable is now becoming unstable. What we once thought were general ideas and mores in human society are changing. There's many speculations about what's going on, but I think everybody within the Hare Krishna movement has a good idea that really it's Lord Chaitanya's moon is rising steadily. The consciousness is changing. And that rise in consciousness affects all levels, including the physical level. So people talk about the poles shifting and everything. Well, we can expect anything. Anything could happen now. So it's a very, very interesting time. But one thing is for sure, and one thing doesn't change, and that is that Lord Sri Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That will never change. And so people have many ideas about who God is. Some people think God doesn't exist. Some people think it's just an imagination by people who need the emotional support. So many ideas. But Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Ishvara Paramakrishna, Satchidananda Vigraha, Anadir Adir Govinda, Sarva Karana Karanam. So Krishna, who is known as Govinda, is the Supreme Godhead. He is an eternal, blissful, spiritual body. He's the origin of all. There is no other origin. And he's the prime cause of all causes. So these are prayers of Lord Brahma before the creation, even before the creation, Lord Brahma is offering these prayers. Advaitam achyutam ananda rupam ajam purana purasham navayovanam cha vidisha durlabham adurlabham atma bhakto govindam adipurasham tamaham vajami. So I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, who is inaccessible to the Vedas, but obtainable by pure, unalloyed devotion of the soul, who is without a second, who is not subject to decay, who has no beginning, whose form is endless, who is the beginning and the eternal Purush. Yet he's a person possessing the beauty of blooming youth. He's a person possessing the beauty of blooming youth. God is a person. This is what most people in the world don't know. They should know. So here in the 10th canto, we're experiencing very much Krishna as a person. So he's, at this point, he's having his childhood pastimes. So he's been, we've heard that he was in the pastimes of stealing yogurt and causing all mischief around the place. This does nothing but give bliss to Mother Yashoda. And the whole meditation of Mother Yashoda is that she hopes that all the gopis, they will just get bliss from seeing Krishna and experiencing him. And she just prays that as all the gopis come and complain to her about Krishna's mischievous pastimes, that she continues to get bliss from hearing those pastimes. So, Srila Vishvanath Chakravarti Thakur, he talks a lot about this, these pastimes, and he mentions that these are really, this is all about ras, so this vatsalya ras, this loving exchange between the parent and the child. That rasa, it's in the heart. All these pastimes, it's this exchange between Krishna and his devotees. So Krishna is always trying to provoke some reaction from his devotees, because that gives him the greatest pleasure. That's his pleasure. And the devotees, they love to have that exchange with Krishna because it gives them the spiritual strength to continue. So this constant exchange is going on. And because Krishna is Bhaktivatsalya, he loves his devotees so much. And this is where this rasa in the heart comes from in the first place, because it's coming from Krishna's love for his devotees, that he wants to engage them in his loving pastimes. So the acharyas say that actually these pastimes of Krishna, they can never be seen to be bad qualities, because they're coming from that place, directly from Krishna, from his love. So they can only be seen to be good qualities. So in this part here, this verse, so Krishna's lying is not seen to be a bad quality, but it's seen to be actually it's the crown quality of all good qualities, because Krishna's lying is provoking loving exchange. So Krishna's often he tries to provoke anger. So he tried it with the stealing yogurt, but Mother Yashoda didn't chastise him for that. There was no angry exchange. So then he went to eat dirt, and this did provoke anger in Mother Yashoda. So now Krishna is more happy because he's actually provoked some anger in Mother Yashoda. So we see this in Krishna. And I was thinking, there's another pastime which I've been reading recently where he, Because Krishna is doing this all the time, so many pastimes of Krishna and his loving exchanges with his devotees. But we hear later about Krishna and Dwarka with Rukmini. And we hear just Krishna's there with Rukmini. He loves to spend time with her. And suddenly he starts to speak in an unusual way. He says to her, you know, well, the background, we probably all know the pastime, that Rukmini was supposed to be married to Shishupal, but she didn't want this at all, so she wrote a letter, a note, and made sure that Krishna got this note. And in this note she said that Krishna could be the only husband for her. And then she gave Krishna the clues as to how and when he could secure that marriage. So Krishna, of course, he turned up right on time, and he swept in on his chariot, lifted Rukmini up and took her away. So he kidnapped her. A very romantic marriage. So this is Krishna again. And so now Krishna started saying, well, actually, I think you've chosen the wrong husband, Rukmini. You know, I really have so many bad qualities. You know, there were so many of these great kings and princes that were so much more qualified than I am. You could have married them. It would have been much better for you if you'd married one of them. You know, they have much better standing in society. I'm seen to be just, you know, a vagabond. You know, I'm just a cowherd boy. I'm just a pauper. I don't have any wealth. And all these other paupers, they follow me around. I've got no good qualities. You should maybe just forget about me and go and marry one of these other kings. So actually, and then what happens is that Rukmini, she, for one thing, she has been very proud of the fact that Krishna spends so much time with her. And but suddenly, these like words of Krishna just are searing. They just tear her heart apart, and she just collapses in grief. And then Krishna, he manifests his four-armed form and just lifts her up, clears the hair from her face, wipes the tears from her eyes, consoles her. And then, you know, as the master of all pacification, he consoles her with his sweet words. But actually, all Krishna was trying to do was just to provoke some anger in her for his own pleasure. Because with his other wives, they would get angry with him, and he enjoyed that anger very much, the anger of a woman. For those men who are married, you probably experience the anger of a woman. It's a very special thing. I was married for many years, and many of you who will be married, you will maybe experience the same thing. But Krishna's supreme lover, he's the only male actually in the entire creation. He's the only one who can properly deal with this situation. So he pacifies Rukmini, and he realizes that he can't provoke anger in her because she's so pure. She has such a loving heart. She can't have anger towards Krishna. She can only have love. And then Krishna sees that in her. And he consoles her and says, yes, I realize you just have the utmost love for me. And then Rukmini continues to say, like all the things that Krishna said, she turns him around and gives a proper purport. So she's a very intelligent lady. So this is, again, Krishna's pastimes. Obviously, with dealing in this, the rasa of loving exchange, Madhurya rasa, Sringara rasa, it's very much more complicated. There's so many possibilities of things maybe not going right. But in Vatsalya rasa, between the mother and the child, it's more simple, a more simple exchange. And then another of my favorites is in Sakya rasa, when Krishna is with his cowherds, friends. He's just there. They've been with the calves and the cows all day. And then they've eaten, taken some prasad together. Now they're just relaxing. So the purport is that they've just been doing what they love to do the most, just relaxing with each other. But Krishna's constantly, he's so funny, Krishna, he's just constantly cracking jokes and imitating the sounds of different birds and different animals in Vrindavan. Krishna is just, he's just the master of all humor. But it says that the cowherd boys, to properly be in that exchange of friendship with Krishna, they have learned to contain their laughter. They've learned to not laugh, because if they laugh, then the mood is broken and Krishna doesn't get any pleasure from the exchange. So I think it's just such a wonderful meditation that all these cowherd boys who actually have been great sages during many, many lifetimes, they've got to the point where they can actually be with Krishna and not break into laughter at his hilarious jokes and pastimes. So this is Krishna. What else can you say about these exchanges of Krishna? I don't have any proper deep realizations other than what I read from the Acharyas and from the great Vaishnavas. So I was thinking, well, then what else could be said? But then I remembered one kind of event in my own childhood, which is I'm not very proud of, but I can say that basically one time, like all children, used to get some pocket money. I used to go to the shop. There was one bar of chocolate I used to like a blue and white wrapper. So one day I went to the shop to get this, and I got to the place where the chocolate was, and I suddenly realized that together with that one, there was a new variety of the same kind, but it was a mint flavor in this green and white wrapper. And then I suddenly said, wait a minute, you know, I want to experience both of them, but I've only got enough money for one. So I said, what will I do, you know? So actually not out of greed, but just as an experiment, kind of experimental, I thought, well, okay, I'll take one and I'll pay for it. And nobody's looking, I just slip the other one in my pocket, you know. So off I went through the shop to the counter, and already, you know, I was feeling bad, you know. I thought, I shouldn't really be doing this, but anyway, let's just do it. So I managed to get through the shop, and then I went into the house, and my mother was there, and she said, so what have you been doing? And I said, I've just been to the shop. And she said, yeah, what did you get? I said, this bar of chocolate. And she said, what else? I said, what do you mean, what else? And she said, what else did you get? And I said, oh, okay. So then I brought out the other one. And she said, well, but you didn't have enough money for two. She knew that. I said, then I told her the terrible truth. And she said, well, you better just go back down to the shop and put it back, because it doesn't belong to you. So you better take it back. So I went to the shop, and when I got there, there was one of the shop girls. She was standing right there, and I was kind of like a bit uncomfortable, and she said, what are you doing? And I said, well, I've come to put this chocolate bar back. So anyway, it turns out that what happened was because when I left the shop, actually the girl in the shop had seen me do this. So she'd called up my mum on the phone and told her. So that's how my mother knew. Anyway, the thing is, I mean, do you think that, you know, was my mother like, did she think, oh, darling child, you know, you're so, you know, you lied to me first, you know, about having what you'd done, and then we were stealing as well from the shop. You're so wonderful. Such a wonderful thing you did. No. She was very, like, angry with me, you know, chastising. And so this point out the difference between Krishna and the conditioned soul, you know, i.e. me. So it's not the same thing. That loving exchange is just not there, you know, because there's a reason for, like, all this, like, exchange of money. Some people say, oh, it's just money. It's just, it doesn't really mean anything. Just take, everything belongs to us anyway. But no, that's not how it is. For the conditioned soul, there are certain principles by which we must live by. So my mother was keeping me to that Actually, there's another thing. Some years later, I was working in Malawi in Africa in a teacher training college as a teacher. And, you know, the students there, the young Malawian students, they used to quite often, they would go out and drink alcohol or go in the bushes with their girlfriends, you know, usual stuff. And we would try to say to them, look, you're supposed to be, we're trying to train you to become responsible adults, so you have to start behaving like that. So no more drinking, no more going out to the bushes. And they said, yeah, sure, we'll do that. But of course, they would just go off and do it again. But then this new teacher came from Zimbabwe, and she was like typical like matron figure, a big jolly African woman. But also she could be extremely tough. And so she came and she said to them one day, you know, you may think that you can just get away with it, saying to us that you're not going to do this and then going off and doing it, you know, just so childish. But you should know there's a watchman who never sleeps. And they were terrified by this, you know, they're terrified. And after that, they kind of stopped. So this kind of thing, this is to do with about there is someone who's always watching us. And this is the aspect of Krishna who's come to help us in the form of the super soul. So there's a wonderful verse in Bhagavad Gita. It says that everywhere are his hands and legs, his eyes, heads and faces, and he has ears everywhere. In this way, the super soul exists, pervading everything. So for me, this was what really got me really to surrender, really, this information that basically everything we're doing in life as we're walking through life, it's never hidden. There's always someone seeing what we're doing. And that is the super soul, the Paramatma. And that's Krishna's mercy on us. The watchman who never sleeps, he sees everything. So I thought, well, Krishna can see everything, he can hear everything. He knows exactly what I'm doing. Who am I? I'm just cheating if I think I can continue living the way I was living. I have to surrender to this. So this is it. Krishna's mercy to us, the materially conditioned souls, is that he gives us these three things, or the three things that forgetful souls can take advantage of. So one is Shastra itself. So Shastra is the Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, is Krishna's words. It's about Krishna. It's non-different from Krishna. Through this, we can have the knowledge of the relationship between ourselves and Krishna. Then there's a super soul, as we were saying, who's constantly walking our path in life with us, seeing everything, hearing everything, always with us. And then there's a spiritual master who, so internally there's a super soul, and externally Krishna is manifesting as the spiritual master who comes in an actual human form to guide us, to properly guide us in our towards spiritual life. So these three things, Shastra, super soul, and spiritual master, these are the things by which we can know that Krishna's actually very much present in the world and giving us love. Even though he's so far away in his spiritual planet, we're not at the point. And this is what I was coming to, is like, what is the difference between us and these devotees who are playing their part in Krishna's pastimes? What is the distance between us and these great devotees? How far is it, you know? So I'm not saying that I can give all the answers to that. Obviously, they're there for the devotees. And as we keep on in our practice, we can get inspirations and enlightenment on this subject. But I mean, one starting point for this was because I listened to the audio version of Chaitanya Bhagavat when I do the Pujari thing in the morning. Jai Shishi Radha Gokulananda Bhagavan Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Shishi Gornatai Shimati Vrinda Deva Shila Prabhupada Ki Jai. And then I was hearing one when I was considering about all this, and it was about the Mahaprakash Leela of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So basically, at that point, in the company of his very dear, close devotees, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has gone on the altar, and he's sitting on the throne for 21 hours. He's sitting on the Vyasasan on the altar. He's taken up his position. And all the devotees are there, and Mahaprabhu begins to say, you know, I just ask for any boon. So all his close associates, he asks them, just whatever boon you want, just ask. And so this happens. But there's one Mukunda who's outside. He had not been invited in to the assembly. And gradually the other devotees, they say, well, what is it to Mahaprabhu? They say, why is Mukunda not been invited here? We feel so bad for him that he's not been allowed to be here with us. And Mahaprabhu he says, actually, I don't want to see that Mukunda, you know. He goes from one place to another. Whatever devotees he associates with, that's the philosophy that he begins to speak about. So he's just like, I don't want to even see him. You know, he's just like a hypocrite. He'll say one thing in one place and one thing in another. And he says, I just don't want to see him. And so the devotees, Mukunda hears Mahaprabhu say this, and he's very, of course, very distressed. And he says to the devotees, how can I ever again get close with Krishna? And the devotees say this to Mahaprabhu, and Mahaprabhu says, maybe after 10 million lifetimes, he can come back to me. And Mukunda hears this, and he goes into great ecstasy. And he starts, like, rolling on the floor with great happiness and joy. And Mahaprabhu hears and sees this as well. And then he calls Mukunda in and says, he's laughing, and say, Mukunda, you're, you know, just ask for whatever boon you want. You have all my blessings. Because Mukunda, he was so happy that the thought that in 10 million lifetimes he could again approach Krishna in this way was enough to send him into great ecstasy. Otherwise, his life was going to be meaningless. There was no point anymore in living if he was never going to be able to see the Lord again in this way. So very powerful pastimes. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says to him, O Mukunda, your offenses are destroyed. Let me give you my blessings. You lost your wealth of devotion by wrong association, but now your love has again conquered me. And Mukunda begins to relate some different pastimes of Krishna, where he shows that he understands. He says, Duryodhan, he was finished because he showed lack of devotion. All the kings and princes around Dwarka when Krishna kidnapped Rukmini, they were all conquered and wiped out because they had no real devotion to Krishna. Hiranyakashipu, they were destroyed by Krishna because they were not showing the proper devotion. But you have examples like Narada Muni. He, in one lifetime, as being the son of a maidservant, and having the association of great sadhus, he raised up to this high level of devotion. And also Vyasadeva, when he felt that there was something he'd missed out when he was transcribing the Vedas. And Narada Muni came and told him, you need to speak about Krishna. So the examples of devotees going up and devotees going down. And then Lord Chaitanya says something really amazing, is that he talks about Kamsa's washerman. You might remember the pastime when Krishna and Balaram went off. That went back on again. When they walk into Mathura, they meet this washerman, and then they meet the garland maker and one other. But particularly with the washerman who they meet first, Lord Chaitanya says, Kamsa's washerman, he saw me, but he refused to help me because the washerman, Krishna wanted to take the cloths that the washerman had. He'd washing Kamsa's cloths, King Kamsa's cloths, and Krishna wanted to have some of those. But the washerman said, no, you're just cowherd boys, go back to the forest. These cloths are for the great king. Someone who's much mightier than you, just go away, back to the forest. So Mahaprabhu was saying, that washerman, he saw me, but he refused to help. And this was very unfortunate for him, because he was deprived of the opportunity of devotional service. He had no attraction for me. He had performed severe penances over many, many lifetimes just to see me. And this fortune gave him the opportunity to see me, but he could not experience the exhilaration of seeing me due to lack of devotion. And he said, I don't show mercy to non-devotees. So we're hearing about this in the purport. Srila Prabhupada is talking about that these associates of Krishna, they had many, many lifetimes of pious activities and great penances to come to the point of associating so closely with Krishna. So then it talks about our position as conditioned souls in the material world. About, you know, there's Krishna's three energies. There's the antaranga, the internal energy, the bahiranga, the external energy, and the tatastha energy. So then we're talking about this tatastha, where the living entities, that's where we're situated. So it's this in-between place that can be understood in many ways, like being on the shore when the water comes in from the sea and covers the pebbles and the rocks on the shore, and then it goes out again, and then they're uncovered, covered, uncovered, covered, uncovered. And so this tatastha region, it's not a physical place, but it's an attitude. It's an attitude of the soul. That's what tatastha is, which means that we are either like, we can be drawn towards Krishna, the light of Krishna, or we can be drawn by the darkness, the shadow of the material energy. We're drawn by there's a tendency to be attracted towards the light because we are parts and parcels of Krishna, ourself. That's our spiritual nature. But there's an attitude in us which pushes us into the darkness to look into the shadow for personal sense gratification. So we're always this in-between region. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he talks about these three shifts of the tatastha, this marginal jiva. There's the enjoy, to enjoy, then to cease to enjoy, and then to go back to the original position. So these phases that we're going through, and these take place over vast periods of time, sometimes because it could be in one creation, and then the creation is finished, and then it starts again, and then again the jivas come into the material universe to continue, and they take up from where they left. So we can talk like vast periods of time, moving from their original position as spiritual beings, seeking to enjoy, and by seeking to enjoy, getting lost in the darkness of illusion. And then at some point later, after experiencing so many ups and downs, enjoyments, disappointments, ceasing to enjoy, and then again going back to the original position. So this is what we are. This is the position of the marginal jivas. So it's like there's two real root emotions. One is love. One is called love and one is called fear. So the emotion of love is when we're approaching, looking towards Krishna. The emotion of fear is when we're looking into the darkness. So we're experiencing this planet Earth that most people are looking towards the darkness to try to find some personal sense pleasure. We've just been in the book marathon. We've all been meeting all these people out there. You can see the condition of some people. There's such a people are all in different positions, but it's such a lesson for all of us, isn't it? We learn so much from that interaction with people because we're talking about the highest thing, and some are ready to receive it and some are definitely not. So we can understand it. It's a scientific process. We can see this is the position of the marginal jiva. And then, interesting, that Srila Prabhupada, he speaks about many times about, of course, this subject is very important. And he says that when the marginal jiva, he's moving towards light in devotion. He's even a devotee, initiated devotee. But still, it's mixed devotion because still there's the pool of material nature. Maya is always waiting to attract us with something. So we're still in between, but we're in a good, we're in a stronger position. So then Srila Prabhupada is talking about there's two positions of love of Godhead. And one is pure love and one is adulterated pure love. So the pure love is where it's just unalloyed devotion. There's no, those devotees who have that, they're just constantly in loving exchange with Krishna. There's nothing that's going to stop them. Like when you put the iron in the fire, it turns to iron, red hot iron. The fire and the iron become simultaneously one. That won't change. But then there are the others. When you take the iron out of the fire, eventually the iron becomes iron and the fire remains fire. So pure love is when there's no discrepancy. There's only constant engagement in Krishna's service, devotional service. But unadulterated love is when that love can change. Suddenly there can be a pull towards the material pull again. So it's like it's said that in this Krishna's internal potency, this Halidini Shakti, this pure love of Godhead. In the case of pure love, Krishna is giving that Halidini Shakti, and the devotees taking it and rising up with it towards Krishna in love of Godhead, pure love. But adulterated love is when the devotee emanates from himself this Halidini Shakti, and that doesn't give any pleasure to Krishna. And then that devotee becomes again, begins to associate with the material pool because becomes puffed up with pride. So that Halidini Shakti is used in the wrong way. It's not received, but the devotee starts to give, which is the wrong mood. And so in this way, we can understand that there is a fall down from the spiritual world, that Krishna, Srila Prabhupada talks like 10% of marginal jivas, they're falling back down from the higher realms, from the spiritual world. And he gives the example, he says, Jai and Vijay, they fell from that position. But we know that Jai and Vijay, they were gatekeepers in Vaikuntha in the spiritual realm, but they fell back down. So there you go. So because in the spiritual realm everything is a Halidini Shakti, but still it's possible. So this is the position of the marginal jiva. But so that's the 10%, but the 90%, the other 90%, they continue with undeviated, unalloyed devotion, pure love of Godhead. So they can continue their service positions anywhere, any place, material world, spiritual world. Srila Prabhupada came into this material world, pure, unalloyed devotee of Krishna. And that was his potency. And so then he's given us all this, he's given us all this knowledge. But the fact is that we are marginal jivas. We can take ourselves right into the spiritual world with just by following the practice. And Srila Prabhupada talks in the end of the purport, running out of time, but tapasa brahmacharyena shamanacha, dhammanacha. So these practices, these austerities, tapasa, we need to practice austerity. There has to be some show of austerity, of penance. We can't just enjoy everything. Even as devotees, you can't keep on eating so much prasadam. Your body's going to get sick. There has to be some austerity, you know. Brahmacharyana, celibacy, very important. Without that, you can't experience spiritual life if you're not celibate. It's just a fact. And shamanacha, dhammanacha, controlling the senses, controlling the mind. This is what we have to do. So Krishna says in the 12th chapter in Gita, you know, the highest thing is to just always think of me, you know, engage in my pastimes, like hear about me, hear from other devotees about me, read about my pastimes. And, you know, for that one who's like completely absorbed in Krishna, that's the best position to be in. But obviously that's quite rare in the material world. Very few really get to that position of pure, like, unadulterated love of Krishna, where every breath is about Krishna, nothing else. But then, if you can't do that, then the practice of devotional service. So following the nine principles of devotional service, like hearing, chanting, the predominant ones, praying, serving the deities, associating with others. By following these regulative principles, then we can gradually come to that position of pure unadulterated love. And if we can't do that, then just work for Krishna. Give money in charity to the temples or come and do some service. For practicing devotional service, we must follow the regulative principles. But many, they don't want to. They're not ready to follow those regulative principles. So then just work. Just give money to the temple. Just come and do some seva now and again. And gradually, with the association of the great devotees, now that the marathon is over, we have these great devotees come back. You know, they're giving us a blessing. We can feel the energy that comes from the Sangatan devotees. It's very special because you can tell they've been having that special exchange. So all these things are very important. So if you can't even do that, then just try and cultivate knowledge. So that's also what we've been doing. We're going to meet people in the street, door to door. Some people, you can see the knowledge, they're actually interested in learning something more than the mundane stuff. Then these people, they're more ready to accept. Okay, I'll read. It could be interesting. I'll read the book. Give it a read. And then hopefully that knowledge will lead to some meditation, and that meditation is that there's more than meets the eye, like about that there must be some kind of controller for all this. It can't just be like a series of random events. There's some substance, there's some truth behind it. But better than still than that meditation is when we can live and do our work, but start to sacrifice the fruits of that work and learn to have sacrifice in our life, to give rather than to just take all the time. So I think that's kind of like I've covered a few points. I hope you got the point I was trying to get to. Basically, it's like these devotees who are very close to Krishna, they're very, very special, but we are in this marginal position. But Krishna is so merciful, he's given all the opportunity to reach that position. It'll take some struggle, some strife to get there, but it's possible. Otherwise, we can turn again into the shadow, into the material pool, and try and enjoy ourselves, try and find pleasure there. What to do? But that free will is always there for the marginal jiva. Even if he is more directly in Krishna's service, he's the free will to step away from it, to give it up again, and to drop again into the material realm. So the message to myself especially is to be more attentive, to take the whole practice more seriously. It's a beautiful philosophy because Krishna is very beautiful. That's it. Hare Krishna.